The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 12th of January, 2026. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed. And I hope you had a nice weekend. I didn't really do anything at all. And that was very nice in and of itself. Not everyone has that opportunity, of course. Lots of you work at the weekends. We're grateful to you for listening this morning. And you can watch the show if you wish as well. You can hop on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and watch across your mobile devices or in your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're also on Facebook and on the X platform as well. Right, let's see what's going on the front of and inside the papers today. We'll start with the Dairy People Donegal News. And Letterkenny University Hospital has reported significant strain on its emergency department in recent days following an overwhelming surge of patient presentations. On Thursday, January 8th, there were 162 patient presentations, with 44 arriving by ambulance. A high portion of these patients presented after 6 p.m, leading to a backlog in ambulance offloading. At one point, the hospital was managing 12 ambulances awaiting to offload patients, four of which were still waiting to be offloaded after midnight. Now, of course, there's a number of complications there, not least the plight of the person on that ambulance and their support network, but also the fact that these ambulances then are being tied up at Letterkenny University Hospital. Let's hope this is a winter surge or something and doesn't become a norm. We hope it wouldn't anyway. The Derry News this morning. Derry City and Strabane District Council members say more must be done at a council level to tackle violence against women and girls. Members of January's Governance and Strategic Planning Committee were presented with an update report on a council-led action plan for ending violence against women and girls, which highlighted a number of council-led initiatives, such as a town hall public meeting hosted by Mayor Rory McHugh, awareness-raising events in the Ballyarnet DEA, and Real Talk, a programme in the Fullside DEA aimed at young men and discussing topics including consent and also boundaries. On to the Nationals now. Let's start with the Irish Independent. And thousands of drivers without insurance are being caught and having their vehicles seized each month as Gardaí tap into an insurance database from the roadside. And I'm reading this, because, of course, you know, the less uninsured drivers on the road, the better. But also, too, that there are people that take the risk. And the way things are now, obviously, you never should. But if you do, you're likely to get caught because Garda have number plate recognition software that's updated at midnight. So, in other words, even if you cancelled your policy at 11:30 the night before and still have the disc, it can scan your number plate and see that you're not insured. So the days of getting away with that, not that that was ever right, but the days of getting away from that are somewhat, are over. So more than 16,000 uninsured vehicles were seized in the first 10 months of last year following the rollout of a new roadside insurance detection system. Since Gardaí gained instant access to insurance data during roadside checks, an average of 1,615 vehicles per month have been seized. I'm doing the insurance on my car at the moment, and I was with one of these companies, but I got my insurance last year with one of these companies that scans 15 insurers or 12 insurers or what have you and comes back with your best quote. And they did that. I got an email there Thursday or something, and they said, we scanned all of the insurers and we've come back with your best quote, 790 euro, I believe the insurance was, which feels high, right? So I clicked into the email and I could see that it was the lowest that they happened to find. Some was up at around 1300, and I was said, right, okay, listen, it's a hit. I'm talking about this all of the time. Insurance prices are going up. It is what it is. It hasn't really changed significant from last year. But then I says, no, I'm tight. I don't have that much money. I need to dig into this a little bit further. And I went through another few insurance companies. 465 euro was the quote that I got in the end, which is a saving of just shy of 300 euro. So my point being, not being preachy, just maybe it's useful to you, if you are with one of these organizations that scans the insurance market for you, take the time and double check yourself. Because as I say, you know, I don't think any of us have 300 euro to throw away. And that will cover the tax as well, really, effectively, a portion of the tax. So the best quote from one of these scrapers, effectively, 760 or 735. And I eventually got a quote then for 475, something along those lines. Now, obviously, what you get with your insurance, roadside breakdown, step back protection, all that kind of stuff, that costs money. But I've made some decisions in that regard and saved just shy of 300 quid. So the savings are still out there. So don't just rely, even if you are with a company that's checking numerous, there's a couple of them that do it with different insurance companies. There's some insurance companies that aren't on those comparison websites. So just check around. As I say, that's 300 euro in my pocket. People granted refugee status will have to wait for 3 years before bringing relatives, including spouses and children, to Ireland under a planned tightening of family reunification rules. This is in the Irish Times. Now, I wasn't really sure about how all of this works and at what point you can sort of bring family members over. But often what we do see is that maybe the majority of those arriving here are male. So maybe they're coming over to do the groundwork to get settled and then bring their families over. That must be part of it. Tomorrow, Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan will brief the Cabinet on a new international protection bill, which will overhaul the state's asylum system and introduce, in advance of European Union wide rules due to come into force in June. Last November, the government signalled it would tighten rules around family reunification for people with refugee status, restricting the ability to bring relatives into the state if refugees are not financially self-sufficient, if they've been in receipt of some social welfare payments, or if they owe a debt to the state. So we'll hear more about that, I'm sure, after the cabinet meeting. A story we may touch on a little later on. Former Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue is now facing calls to appear before the Oireachtas Finance Committee to answer questions about state funding he provided to the World Bank. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. When you hear this, it'll stink to high heavens. What does it mean? We don't know, of course. I presume that's why he's being called. There are effectively calls that he might speak to an Oireachtas committee. So I'll read on. On Saturday, the Irish Daily Mail revealed Mr. Donoghue provided an extra 10 million euro in funding to the World Bank beyond what it had requested. So it set a figure. We gave it, through the offices of Pascal Donoghue, an extra 10 million. Documents show the World Bank recommended a contribution of 131.4 million from Ireland from 25 to 28. But Mr. Donoghue opted to provide 141.4 million on April 24th, 2025. This despite his own department officials recommending significantly less. And then Mr. Donoghue resigned as finance minister 7 months later, and in November last year, he took up a job at the World Bank and is now facing calls from the opposition to appear before the Oireachtas Finance Committee. So I'm not drawing any inference from this, okay? The World Bank sought a certain amount of money, 131.4 million. Mr. Donoghue opted to give them an extra 10 million, 141.4 million. His own department officials recommended against that. He then gave up his job and took up a job with the World Bank. And some people in politics believe that requires a little bit of scrutiny. I don't know what you think. The Star tells us that the world was on high alert last night after Iran threatened immediate revenge attacks on the US if Donald Trump stepped in to interfere with their latest protests. Chaotic scenes broke out in the capital, Tehran, and cities across the country, with reports that more than 500 people have been killed and 10,000 arrested. Trump said the US stands ready to help as Iran is looking for freedom. Okay, so obviously this is an opportunity for he to go in there. Since this was published, I believe the Iran leadership have contacted the United States to say that they want to have a chat, maybe in a way to resolve it. Now, finally, I'm just wondering what you think out there, especially if you are the parent of a neurodivergent child, because there is a new doll that's been released by Barbie, and it's been described as the first autistic Barbie. So I'm not sure if this is good because it's more visible and it's more relatable to certain children, or if it's stereotyping. I don't know. I'll read it, but I want to know what you guys think. What's the take on this? So a row has blown up over the launch of the first autistic Barbie, and it comes with noise-cancelling headphones and fidget spinners. The $16.99 doll, designed by people with autism, is part of an effort by makers Mattel to make children feel more included. Her unique features include eyes that gaze slightly to the side, representing a dislike of direct eye contact. They do gaze very slightly, though. The headphones represent how the devices can reduce sensory overload by blocking out background noise, while the fidget spinner can reduce stress and improve focus. She also has elbow and wrist articulation, enabling hand gestures that some people use to process sensory information or express excitement. So if you are the child of a neurodivergent child, would you give this doll to them? Again, I don't really have I have a great understanding of this area. We cover it extensively. But in terms of this articulation of the elbows and hands, the slightly offset gaze, the headphones, the fidget spinners, like, is this seen as something that you could give to your child and it would say, okay, there's a toy that I can relate to? I'm not sure what the opposition is to it. There is some information further down. The autistic community have said many times online that this exact representation of an autistic Barbie would be a tragedy. So what do you think? The best people to determine what's right and wrong in this area certainly are parents and caregivers. I'm joined by Geraldine, and this is in the context of residents of Church Court in Strabane, which is owned by Woven Housing, have said that despite it being ongoing for almost 2 years, no permanent solution has been found to an ongoing problem with rats in the area. And apologies if you've just eaten, or if you don't like rats, or you're having your breakfast, but the reality is this is a lived reality for residents. Geraldine, it sounds absolutely horrendous.
Oh, it really is, to be honest.
What's day-to-day life like? How do these rats sort of present themselves, or often are they seen, or what's the story?
Well, they're seen all the time, around the back gardens and around the front. It's like a playground around the front, and they're climbing up and down the walls. To be honest, they look like just a pile of Spider-Man running around the place.
So is it like they've become accustomed to this residential setting and feel like they have the run of the place?
Yes, very much so, yeah.
And are they external? They run around the houses. I mean, that in itself is scary enough. Are they going into houses? Can you hear them running up and down the walls, rattling around in the roofs?
So far, no, they haven't come into the house just yet. They're roaming around the back gardens and around the front area.
Mm. And what triggered this, do you think? Because it's been happening for 2 years. Is it that they just nested locally, or however they commune? Or what happened, do you think, Geraldine, that sparked this?
Well, to be honest, I think it's coming from the wall that's my next door neighbour beside me. They've got a big wall that's up, and it seems to be like they're invested all in there, because there's a big yard up above that's got like wood, and the wood itself, it's like it's generating its own heat, and there's steam flying out of it.
Right.
So, you know, there have been people out to put stuff into the walls, but it seems to be getting worse instead of better.
So, in other words, people are trying to poison them or what have you, but it's not had any positive impact to get rid of the population.
Yes, that's right.
So, what do residents think needs to be done, Geraldine?
They need to get to the end of the problem and try and get rid of them, because we're terrified to go out. We're terrified to let our kids out. Like, we had the snow weather and we just couldn't let them out to go and play in the snow, and we had to get rid of toys because they're eating at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're bound in the house. We just can't go out.
So describe to me again what it's like if you go into your backyard. Are you guaranteed to see a rat, or what is it like in your backyard on your average day?
Well, normally you would, you know, go out, and then about 5-10 minutes later, you'll just see a rat just flying past you, you know, on the ground or up on the walls.
All right, okay, that's
which is crazy.
Yeah, that's horrible. Do you think it's a local authority issue? Is this Strabane, Derry and Strabane District Council, the housing, whomever owns the housing? What do you think, who has responsibility, or is anyone taking responsibility?
To be honest, I'm not too sure, because I've reported it myself and they've been told that they would get back to me, and no one's got back to me. My neighbours as well, they have called numerous of times. Mm. I've been in here myself for about 2-3 years now, and this has been going on before I came in here as well. And nothing seems to be done, and it doesn't seem to be clearing up. It seems to be getting far worse.
Yeah.
And it's awful, to be honest.
No, it sounds horrible. And these animals have, you know, they're not clean either. So it's the visuals,
no,
it's the noise, it's the threat to children, and are pets a problem? Are they having any problems interacting with pets?
What do you mean, sorry?
Dogs, cats, I don't know. Are the rats a problem for any domestic animals, or is that not really part of the issue?
I'm not too sure. I have a cat, but she's always indoors.
I get you, yeah, okay.
So she doesn't go out, you know, out and about. But to be honest, the size of the rats that I've seen myself, I think they would take a cat out.
Mm. Wow, horrible. Okay. Geraldine, listen, thank you for that. We'll make contact to see if we can get information on it. They are, it's the whole notion of it is, I don't like mice, but I'm looking at some of the video footage here, and they're just running around like they own the place. If you live in that area as well, and you've got an issue with the rats, let us know. 00353-8660-25000 is the WhatsApp and text number there. Now, just trying to get used to sort of introducing, I didn't read enough comments last week, actually, is what I'm going to say, right? So we have dozens and dozens and dozens of you that commented in, and just as I was getting used to things, I wasn't allowing enough time for that, which I will going forward, because it's very, very important. So I just want to recognise that and put my hands up and say that I didn't get to as many comments as I should have. I did on Thursday and Friday, but on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was just a little bit difficult. Hi, Greg. I'm retired now, and I'd like to be able to fish 20 or 25 lobster pots in my older age, just like my father and his father before him. That's the way it's always been. And why can't you, though? Have you looked into it? Is it something that you're not allowed to do? A caller says, the Taoiseach is great at what he's doing. That has to be the joke of the year. Yes, he's great at giving millions to other countries, none to the Irish. It's all taxes. About taxes on taxes. What a statement to come out with. Well, I said that, right? And I said it tongue in cheek because Micheál Martin was getting a bit of a hammering during the Friday panel, right? So, but I also said there are some that would argue that we are a very wealthy country under his watch. When someone says that Australia is a very expensive place to live, this is from Charlie on Facebook. It must be really bad, but look at Ireland, the most expensive petrol diesel in Europe. The electricity cost is going through the roof. 250,000 homes can't pay the bills. Food prices are soaring, and house prices and rentals are beyond young people's incomes. The banks are controlling who stays and who emigrates. Yeah, I've seen some comparisons. I've seen some comparisons with the cost of living in Australia versus here, and a lot of the stuff is comparable. Some of the stuff is cheaper here, but there's a lot of stuff you have to factor in too about, you know, the quality of life, your happiness. You know, happiness is something that you can't put a figure on per se. And some people are more happy. Obviously, we discussed the Mercosur deal extensively last week because of its significance. And there was a big protest in Athlone at the weekend. Many people from Donegal down at it. This caller says, the Mercosur deal, if passed, will also affect a lot of non-farming people, as a lot of the produce that would be imported is loaded with untraceable antibiotics and possibly could contribute to antibiotic resistance in humans. That is what the experts say. What Europe is saying is, trust our systems, trust our monitoring. Not a lot of people are prepared to do that. We were talking, obviously, as well, extensively about emigration. A caller says, yes, it is a lost generation gone from Ireland, respected more in other countries and maybe dearer, but more a bang for your buck there. And then You had Minister Noonan saying it was a lifestyle choice, same minister responsible for the sad passing of Breed McColl in the infected blood scandal. I remember when TV3 back then showed the Irish that emigrated as one family bid farewell to one another after another of their left. So their four sons had left and then made the ultimate sacrifice. They moved over themselves and many more will go as well. Yes, that thing, and it's been argued here in this country at the time of the recession as well, or in this county, that it's a lifestyle choice. Yes, it is. Some people will always seek to travel, to go abroad, to improve their life. But it's about whether or not it's a decision or a decision that's being made for you. And that's wherein lies the difference. If you got 20 teenagers who just left college or 20 people in their 20s, over all generations, I don't know what the percentage of them that would emigrate, but there would always be a percentage. You know, the people that want to go and spread the wings and experience different things. But just because that percentage quadruples, you can't still say it's a choice because the other three quarters or the other, you know, multiplication of that are saying, there's nothing here for me. I have to go. I have to go because it's the only way I can progress my life. And it's incredibly, incredibly sad to see. A caller says, Greg, when is something going to be done about the water issues in Inishowen? We had a terrible time over Christmas and woke up to another one, burst main in Drumfries. Do the citizens of Inishowen not count? Are we not also taxpayers putting up with this ridiculous care of one of the most fundamental rights, that is, of water? I don't know what's going on, and I think it's time maybe we, got a true understanding of the extent of the problem, what Irish Water is proposing to do, how long it might take to do it, because it seems to be constant, and no one should have to live their life like that, not having a semi-even reliable water system. Michael joins me now, Michael Kavanagh of Cavan Key Fishing. Michael, good morning to you. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Happy New Year. And I see this year we have two things in common. We go to the same barber and we both have had cuts.
Okay. the other thing, I'm not wearing my glasses, I have a pair of glasses now. I mean, we're going to be twins at this stage. Michael. Right. Okay. So you were listening to our conversation about fishing and, the decimation really of the industry, as many people are describing it here. And of course, you've got an insight into that, Michael.
Yeah, well, you mentioned I was driving at the time, and you mentioned that the fishing and farming was practically finished in Ireland. But the EU and consecutive Irish governments have decimated coastal communities.
And just to clarify, a lot of it is
by pandering. The EU has been pandering to Norway, Faroes and Iceland for years.
Yes, and I want to dig into that with you a bit more, Michael, but just to clarify those comments, like, I don't believe it's naturally happened, by the way. I think we've been legislated and regulated out of fishing and farming in this country. But anyway, how did we get here? Pandering to countries that aren't even in the EU. Is that the point you were going to make, Michael?
Yeah, Norway, Faroes, Iceland. These people set their own autonomous quotas. Like Norway in the past 5 years have caught 1 million tons more mackerel than they should have caught. And as you well know, the boats in Killybegs are tied up for 8 months of the year. And if the mackerel science is anything like the boarfish science, it's totally off the wall. Definitely there's needs for cuts in the mackerel for to sustain a fishery for the future for those who are going to be involved in it. I have two sons involved in it. We have a vessel called the Father McKee. And in 2007, myself and Brendan Gill, who owns a vessel called the Brendellin, we've been patrolling together for over 40 years. We established a new fishery called Boarfish. And for 4 years, we fished away quite successfully at it and established a market for it in Faroes. And then in 2011, the EU introduced a quota on it. And then people who had never fished it all wanted a share of it, so it was divided. Ireland wouldn't have a quota had it not been for us. As it stands at the moment, Ireland has 70% of the TAC. And in 2024, the Marine Institute had estimated that there was a biomass of 180,000 tons. And in 2025, they said that there was 140,000 tons less. Where did they go? Because the whole quota, including bycatch, would have been probably around 45,000 tons. And the time we did the survey, they took on their own equipment on board, and because ours wouldn't have been calibrated, and they said it wouldn't just be successful. And they worked out grids, and if they went up one line and they saw no fish, and then they moved 2 miles parallel, and they got 10 tons. So 10 times nothing is nothing. And if that's the way they're still doing it, it's totally off the wall. And one evening, just coming into dark, I said, there's boar fish here. And they said, well, our equipment doesn't see it. I said, well, I can see it. And I'm going to prove to you now that it's there. And I'm going to shoot the nets. And we shot off our net. We towed for 15 minutes and hauled for 5 ton of fish that weren't there.
Wow.
You know, if that's the way that the science has been done, is it any wonder that we're in the state that we're in?
Yes, but it's why does the science always work against us, though? You see, that would make me have a distrust of it.
We all have a distrust of it if that's the way it's been done, you know, and something needs to change, because we got an increase in 2025. We expected an increase in 2026, and instead it's been decreased.
So why do you think that happens? Do you think it is bad science, or do you believe that the science is being manipulated?
Oh, I think it's bad science. It's right. Just the way they work the grids, you know. If when we were doing the survey, if they saw nothing on their equipment and we could see it on the sonar, and I pointed that out several times, that didn't count because it wasn't part of the grid. I mean, that's no way to conduct.
Do you think then that that means, say, for instance, the science on mackerel couldn't be trusted?
Well, I have no proof of that because I'm not sure. I've never taken part in the mackerel survey, so I don't know what way they did it.
Yeah, but you got...
But there's an Icelandic scientist now disagreeing with the science that has been put forward. So,
can I just go back to the boar fish? There was a boar fish quota for other countries. Was it you and your partner who eked out some of this for Ireland, or did you effectively establish this the interest in boar fish? Sorry, I just that interested me, Michael.
Well, we established it because at that time there wasn't a lot of layoff, and some boats had detected bits of boar fish. And at that time there was only 2 areas where we could get them.
Mm-hmm.
And when some vessels, in particularly in Denmark and one in the UK, saw that we were being very successful and they were watching where we were going, and then they got in on the act. But Ireland has the biggest share of the TAC because of our track record. And had it not been for the fact that we had established it and put a lot of effort into it, spent a lot of money on it, the first years we were landing it, I developed a piece of equipment for crushing the fish as we discharged them, and I put a patent on it. And we went to Denmark with it, but water that they should have put back into the vessel, they let it run into the harbour, and there was fish fat all over the harbour, so they didn't want us back. And it took them a long time to get the fish out of the vessel. We were in the North Sea going back to the south of Ireland to catch more, and I got a phone call, great product, but do us a favour, don't come back. So then I contacted Faroes and asked them if they'd be interested, and we established a market in Faroes for it then. And there wasn't much money for it then, but it was a case of having to do something. We had a vessel that was relatively new.
Well, what is the boar fish used for?
It's used for fish meal.
Okay.
And because of the colour of the fat, it's very good for the salmon that they're... salmon farms.
Well, okay.
The oil is a kind of a pink colour.
Where do we go from here, though, then, in terms of the fishing industry and the science? I mean, obviously, listen, it's clear that you're an expert in the area of the boar fisheries, but I suppose this conversation was triggered by my comment that, you know, is fishing and farming in this country now sunset industries, really, for right or wrong? you know, given the age demographic and profile of both. What is the future? What needs to happen next, Michael, drawing on your generations and years of experience?
Well, we need to get, at the moment, we appear to have a Minister for Fisheries who has an interest and was fighting our corner in Europe, but sadly, when the rest of Europe is against you, it's very difficult. Our government and civil servants need to work with us and not against us. Because for Brexit, Michel Barnier and the KFO at the time established a European alliance where we could all get together and let's fight the UK. But it turned out Michel Barnier was fighting for his own people. You know, and we were left with nothing. And Simon Coveney didn't, I don't think he did us any favours either. And he's out of politics now.
How,
but we need support from our politicians.
Unless there is a major change, where do you see the fishing industry and your son's role in it, if you wanted to go down that route, where do you see the fishing industry for Ireland in a decade, for an example, if things don't change dramatically?
Well, if it keeps going downhill the way it's going at the moment, there won't be one. And it's very sad because the vessel we have now, is I've never had a vessel of this age. She'll be 22 years old now this August. Granted, we spend a lot of money on her every year. But to keep a vessel lying at the quay, you've got to keep an engine running.
Yeah.
You've got to insure it. You've got to renew all your life-saving equipment and firefighting equipment every year. Every 2 years, we go to dry dock, which we went in 2024. We have to go this year again. And that takes an excess of $500,000.
Wow. Yeah.
Every 2 years.
And the thing is, you know, if we're not using or fishing in our waters because we've been regulated out of it, it doesn't mean that next thing you know, the seas are full of fish. It just means that our share goes to other countries in Europe and outside of Europe as well. It's crazy, isn't it, that we could end up be sitting ashore, what with these vessels rusting because they're not being used anymore, but still watching these mega ships and not so mega ships plundering our seas. It's crazy.
Well, that's already happening, you know. And the light of the vessels from Iceland and Faroes and Norway, they don't have an issue over horsepower or tonnage. They could build a vessel the size of the Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Whereas within the EU, you have restraints on your kilowatts and your tonnage, you know.
Doesn't make sense.
They can catch more fish in our water than we can.
Yeah, but the problem is there's other countries in Europe that are favourable to the likes of the Faroe Islands and others for different industrial reasons, you know, but it's us that are picking up it's us that have to give up, not just business, but I think part of our culture as well and part of our history, it's us that have to give it up because of the vested interests of bigger countries in the EU that should be looking out for us, but they're looking out for themselves and their relationships with the Faroes, etc.
Yeah, well, there's one company in Holland, Parlevid, a man called Dick Parlevid would be the big boss of it. And he has vessels registered in all over Europe, including Faroes and Greenland. So it doesn't really matter to them where the cuts are, because they'll get their share if there's increase somewhere else.
They've hedged their bets.
Theirs is a billion euro industry. Mm. Ours is small family businesses. Like I have, there's 12 of us in the company. There's 9 of a crew on board the Father McKee, and they're currently in Denmark as of yesterday forenoon with boarfish because of the price. You know. And that's with boarfish that apparently don't exist. And when the groundfish survey was done last year, the Marine Institute had equated that there was an increase of boarfish through the whitefish, but they don't exist. So if they're showing an increase in one place and decrease in another, surely there's something badly wrong.
Of course, but we all know what's going on. Listen, thank you for your insight and your years of experience. Thank you so much. Michael Kavanagh there of Kavanagh Fishing, just with a further insight into the realities. A caller says, no good Ireland cutting quotas if the rest of Europe and countries that are not doing the same. It's the same with climate change. Squeeze the ones who try and the bigger polluters get off scot-free, seemingly. Thank you. Just to let you know, on the road there, you might want to let listeners know to expect delays on the Derry Road. Emergency services are dealing with an overturned lorry between Moville and Redcastle. On the issue of water in Inishowen, good luck getting an answer from Ishka Éireann that isn't automated or an AI machine. They're all about profits, so won't spend the money in infrastructure. They are willfully allowing sewage flow into rivers and the sea, which is illegal, and have set dates to rectify the pollution years away. And the majority of these pollution incidents in Ireland are in Donegal, but tried to get a human from the company to discuss it. On rats in Strabane, the remedy re-rats, it would be worth a trip to Tory Island and get some Tory clay from the Duggan family. Spread the clay around the garden, the rats will disappear. Something in the Tory clay that the rats don't like. There are no rats on Tory Island, but I mean, once you've got rats off the island, they're not going to parachute in either. Is that a myth? I'm not in any way being disrespectful, but I'll tell you, if anyone wants to make a documentary, go and get some of this Tory clay and bring it to Strabane and see if it works. You'd have an award-winning documentary if it did. That lady needs a Jack Russell dog or cats. Yep, this isn't one rat. I know what you're saying. This is an army of rats. On finance, why are we giving away money to the World Bank, the richest bank in the world? Any wonder we're living in a crippled economy? Well, there's to and fro in we have a place in the world, and there is a cost to that as well. We benefit, we give out. I know what you're saying, but no man is an island and no country is an island either. So there is some stuff that needs to be done. But I've never seen a situation where people give an extra 10 million. You know, the World Bank asking for 141, and we say, no, 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 here's 151. Anyway, any jobs going? Gary Glennon is manager of Letterkenny Youth and Family Resources, and he joins me on the programme now. Gary, good morning to you, and thank you so much for your time.
Morning, Greg. Sorry, Greg, just a quick correction there. It's Local Youth and Family Service. It's LIFES. I know it was reported wrong there.
That's okay. No problem. That's that. We'll get that right too. So Local Youth and Family Services, a.k.a. LYFS. Right. So you stuck out a notice saying, deeply shocked and saddened that LYFS was issued with an ultimatum when being offered a sizable financial donation, I understand in the hundreds, requiring that we had to guarantee it would go to Irish families only. Right, why did this give you pause for thought, Gary?
Well, I just think we're actually disgusted, Greg. You know, that this would be a condition that we put on any donation to support families. And regardless who that family is, you know, they've got a need for support. You know, we can be honest with ourselves, and you know, who can we be honest with? And in our work, you know, honesty is the forefront of what we do. And that trust that people have in us as an organisation, you know, we're definitely going to jeopardise that for the sake of a few hundred pounds from someone who has other reasons for their donation.
And is it clearly discrimination to you? Is it not possible that this person believes that maybe certain sections of society get more supports than Ireland, and they're not racist, they're not against others, but they just feel that they want to make sure that their money helps Irish families? And it's awkward for me because I'm trying to sort of, you know, put a different position here. But
I understand. I know it's a difficult situation we're all in, Greg, when it comes to situations like this, but I don't know what the person's thinking. And the other thing is, we'll never know, because we probably won't engage with that person again unless they have a change in terms of what their approach is to making donations. Maybe they do think that, and maybe they don't think that. But the bottom line is, you know, poverty and hunger, it doesn't discriminate. So why should we?
Yeah. What kind of reaction have you had to this, Gary?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because it is a brave step, right? Because you could have privately kept this to yourself. Well, you could have. Yeah, go ahead.
This isn't brave, Greg. What's brave is people who are trying to look after their families. That's brave. You know, and in conditions, you know, that's not becoming to human beings, never mind anything else. That's brave. Mm. You know, going without food for yourself to provide for your kids, that's brave. What we did is not brave. What we did was the right thing to do. We're not going to accept that. And I don't think anybody should accept that. You know, and there has been comments, Greg, you've probably seen them. The people said, you know, why didn't you just take it and use it for Irish families only? You know, can you imagine, we have an open door service both in Letterkenny and Gweedore. Can you imagine a family came in, you know, and they're not from this country, and they say, can you, know, get me some nappies or some baby formula and stuff? And we say, actually, we can't. And then somebody then who is, you know, from an Irish, you know, family come in and say, yeah, can I get it? And go, yes, you can. I mean, could I lie in my bed straight at night, you know, knowing that I did that, you know, regardless of, you know, what the policy procedures of any organisation might say? We just don't do those things.
And you know, I think
everybody should be dignity, respect, and equally.
And I think it is about time that some of this stuff was called out. There's a lot of stuff happening in broad daylight that perhaps would have been sort of said quietly in the past. So I suppose it's important to call it out when you see it, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, that you're right, Greg. There is, you know, and look, we're in a precarious position. You know, we're a funded agency. You know, we're very fortunate to be funded under TUSLA. We're really privileged to be working with families who most need our support. You know, but what we have to say is, and what we will say, and an opportunity to say this is to thanks to every single person who has come up and provided support to families, you know, their fellow people. Providing, you know, nappies, you know, cots, Moses baskets, prams. There was a call out there last week from a young girl who gets €135 a week on social welfare. She's just going to have a baby. And she says, look, is there any support you can get? We've been inundated with people coming saying, look, will that be any good? Will that be any good? And that, why don't we just focus on that for a bit? You know, focus on the positive things that people are doing. And the people in Donegal should be really proud of themselves. You know, what they have to offer. You know, and we can talk about the volunteer county and stuff like that there. Yeah, we've got all that there. This stuff that gets in the way of a few people who say, you know, some people's getting treated better than others, you know, everybody should be treated equally. Let's focus on doing that.
Yeah, but what we're doing too, though, is really speaking to the majority of people in Donegal, the overwhelming majority, and that's evident in how things are supported without caveats. And I suppose, too, as I said a little earlier on, if there is a minority that think this way, and I do believe it is a minority, rather than just accept it, you know, call it out and not normalise it. So I think a lot of people will agree with what you've done. I just want to finish on the positive work that you do, and it is amazing what the local youth and family services do. How do people learn more about the services that you provide? Support you maybe, for an example, or contact you to see if you can offer any support. Just run us through that, if you don't mind, Gary.
Yeah, I mean, that is the Facebook page. You know, social media has such a powerful, I was going to say tool, maybe a weapon in some instances, you know, for people. So I've contacted through the private message, as that young girl did last week, you know, soon to become a mother. Yeah, do that there. My mobile number, I can pass to the office there. Absolutely give us a call and see what we can do. Greg, can I just go back to something you said there in terms of the messaging? Something that's quite simple, and I've asked for this, you know, for actually the Minister of Justice. You know, if the government just came out and told us that everybody's getting treated the way they are, we would know better. Because we've had so much rhetoric and so much myths about people coming in, you know, seeking asylum, saying they get X, Y, and Z. You know, I think it was like most recent was they get their car service for free. I mean, that's absolute rubbish. Why can the government not just come out and tell us exactly what everybody gets, and then we know where we are?
Because it's not politically advantageous to do that at the moment.
Yeah, you're right. It's not safe for them.
That shouldn't be the way it is, but that is the way it is. Gary, listen, thank you very much. LYFC, check them out. Local Youth and Family Services. And I just, you know, I'm so pleased that that young person who you referenced reached out for help, because you wonder how long did they have the message box open before they typed in, and you should never be afraid to seek support and hope, because there's organisations like you, yours, and those that support your organisation that are saying, don't think about it, get in touch, we can hopefully help. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks so much.
Look after yourself, buddy. Thank you. That's Gary Glennon there.